Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another Ion Travel Podcast. And sending all best holiday wishes your way, with the most obvious wish of all, that 2020 can't end fast enough. Towards that end, my year-end conversations on the state of travel and the state of your travels with Gary Leff, who writes the amazing View from the Wind column, then with airline analyst Henry Hardevelt, and with Madhu Unnikrishnan, who edits Airline Weekly for the folks at Skift. First up, Gary Leff. So much to talk about as we end the year and survive Christmas. So, by the way, Merry Christmas Plus One to all of you out there. And Merry Christmas Plus One to my next guest, who writes the most incredible column called viewfromthewing.com. He's basically a regular on the show because every time I open up his column, it's like wacky, crazy, but true stuff. And also really helpful stuff to have to help you navigate what is not only uncharted waters these days, but uncharted everything. Gary Leff in Austin, Texas. Welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Excited for the end of 2020 and a brand new 2021 coming up.
Yes, 2020 cannot end fast enough for me. And all I can say is being down in Punta Mita, Mexico is not a bad way to do it. But first and foremost, let's catch up on what we think is going to happen in 2021. I've seen airfares over the last 2 weeks. I mentioned this on the show last week. I got to mention it again. I saw an airfare in Miami to LA on a 777 on American Airlines, one way, $32. I saw an airfare from Fort Lauderdale to LaGuardia, one way, for $18. That was on Spirit. I saw an airfare in Mexico. I'm in Mexico now. I saw an airfare from Mexico City to Guadalajara. I'm going to let you guess. Go ahead. What do you think?
Oh, gosh. No, I mean, I know what U.S. airfares are like, but Mexico City, I'm not sure I could tell you. I'm sure it's cheap.
Okay, whatever you're going to guess, I guarantee you it'll be too high. Try. Just try.
$29.
As I warned you, you're too high. $4.18. $4.18 on Volaris. I am not making that up. So we're seeing what? In the law of supply and demand, a whole lot of supply that's entering the new year, aren't we?
Look, and with the case of the largest U.S. airlines, with the exception of basic economy tickets, in the even in the future, no change fees. And right now, no change fees because of the pandemic. So there's just not a whole lot of risk even in jumping on some of these fares, even with the uncertainty in the world, right? We've got too many seats and not enough passengers. And that's going to stay this way for kind of a while because airlines have all these planes even sitting on the sidelines or not flying as much as they could. And they'll start adding those back as passengers come back. So, you know, a lot of empty seats is good for cheap airfares. It's also good for people looking to use their miles.
And then the other thing that's happening, which I never expected this would happen based on the behavior of the Americans, the Uniteds, and the Deltas towards the end of this year, which we're almost at now, is that there are a lot of airlines out there that are basically saying, you know what, we got a lot of parked planes on the ground. Let's just go somewhere. Let's add routes. Let's just see what happens. Let's throw some darts up against the wall. Southwest Airlines announcing 12 new routes. Frontier Airlines announcing 19 new routes out of cities that they never flew to before, and in some cases, cities that they said they would never go to, like Miami and Chicago O'Hare and Houston Intercontinental.
And Southwest is going to go, of all places, to Fresno, right? You know, Southwest Airlines owned, when they acquired Morris Air, they shut down Fresno, and that was 27 years ago. They, you know, they're looking for places to fly. They're looking for passengers. The last few years, Southwest couldn't grow because they didn't have the planes, and the MAX was grounded. They had planes taken out of their system, but now they're not operating with the same kind of frequency to major business destinations without business travelers. So they have excess aircraft time, places they can send around. They can get into an airport like Chicago O'Hare that's normally full because they're not seeing, O'Hare's not seeing the traffic it usually sees. So there's interesting opportunities for airlines to try new and different things. And it's in that way, look, I'd never wish what we've all been through on anyone, but it's also an exciting time.
It is an exciting time and a true buyer's market, not just in terms of airfares, but in terms of frequent flyer miles. You know, the amount of capacity that's out there right now is, to me at least, somewhat staggering.
But the airlines are going to be offering a lot of big bonuses to people to fly, trying to put people into those seats and trying to sway people away from their competitors. And those miles are going to be easier to use for a while, too, because of all of these extra seats. Now, look, there is going to come a time when planes are full again, and this is all going to change. Right, they're going to be printing miles, and then all of a sudden there will be not enough seats for those miles. But we're looking at a golden age of frequent flyer travel for a period of time. I mean, call it 2 years. I don't know exactly how long. We're going to be richly rewarded for flying and also for redeeming.
Exactly. And by the way, for anybody, this is certainly an educational year for anybody who follows this. And if, by the way, if you're really bored one day and you have nothing better to do, get the 10K reports from the Securities and Exchange Commission on all the publicly traded airline stocks and read what they report in there on their frequent flyer programs. It's staggering the amount of money that they have made from those programs up until 2020 and what they were actually worth and how they valued them. And then even more staggering, how American, United, and Delta essentially mortgaged those frequent flyer programs to raise much-needed capital in the wake of the pandemic. We're not talking like getting like a $100,000 loan here. We are in the billions and billions of dollars. I mean, that was an eye-opener for people who ever asked the question, what are these frequent flyer programs worth, right, Gary?
United mortgaged theirs for $6.5 billion. Raised in the private markets. American pledged theirs to the Department of the Treasury for CARES Act subsidized loans for $7.5 billion. And Delta originally planned to go in for about $6.5 billion. Their offering was oversubscribed, and Delta said, hey, wait, stop at $9 billion. The American's program, the Advantage program, was appraised at between $18 and $30 billion. The Treasury Department's requirements were that they had to have at least collateral worth double what they loaned out. And so the government believed it was worth more than $15 billion when they lent the $7.5 billion against it when they approved that loan. And that's because it's big money. The programs continue to earn billions of dollars every year from their co-brand credit cards, from selling miles to other partners as well. And people keep earning these miles on the credit cards, even during the pandemic, because we all see travel as something that we are going to do again. So, you know, if that weren't the case, people would be shifting away from these cards. And there's been some modest reduction in spend on these portfolios, but it hasn't been huge. So they keep earning these miles, and the programs keep bringing in that cash. And it's, look, even in the pre-pandemic times, look, American Airlines was basically either breaking even or losing money on actually flying passengers and cargo, moving planes around. And, you know, most of the time in previous quarters, their entire profit was accounted for by revenue generated by the Advantage program. You know, the other airlines were actually making a little bit of money flying, but you know, it's fundamentally, you know, these are, you know, marketing businesses that fly planes.
It sounds almost counterintuitive that the airlines would make money on a frequent flyer program when they are ostensibly, quote unquote, giving away free tickets for their frequent flyers. But as you and I know, because we've run the numbers, the airlines make so much money from the credit card companies and the banks associated with and linked to those frequent flyer accounts, whether it's Delta for American Express or Citibank for American or Chase for United, the numbers are completely out of control.
Yeah, this is the most successful marketing innovation in history. Almost any company in the world, marketing is an expense line. For the airlines, it is a profit center because people have the romance of travel and they're able to effectively rent out their programs to other businesses at a substantial profit to bundle that travel with what other businesses are selling, mostly the banks. And, it's really remarkable, but it also is, you know, quite thrilling. It is a lucrative thing for the airlines because it's also good for customers. It used to be the case you'd see commentators saying, you know, gosh, if airlines had known what was going to happen with these programs and that everyone was going to match them, if they had the opportunity, they would never have started them in the first place. Well, clearly that isn't true.
And speaking to Gary Leff, the author of ViewFromTheWing.com, there's a reasonably good chance that in your wallet or in your purse, you're carrying a card, a Visa card, a MasterCard, an American Express card, that's got some proposed perks. In fact, that's probably one of the reasons why you got the card. And along with that card comes, in some cases, a pretty hefty annual fee. If you want to get the Chase Preferred Visa, I think it's $550 a year. American Express is more, et cetera, et cetera. And what comes along with those cards in normal times can be access to airline lounges, can be rebates on baggage charges, can be all sorts of great money-back deals or credits that if you play the cards right, and Gary's one of those guys who does, it's well worth the investment. Well, we're living in dysfunctional times now, in which we're not flying as much, which means we're not using lounges as much. We're not checking bags as much, so we're not paying baggage fees as much, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my question to the esteemed Mr. Leff is, are the banks trying to figure out the retention issue here of how you keep your customers happy when the perks that got them to get the card in the first place either are not available or not being used?
You know, several of the banks have been pretty aggressive in offering the kind of perks that are relevant to people when they aren't traveling. So American Express has done things like giving Platinum card members credits to cover their streaming services and credits to cover their cell phone bills. And you've seen the ability to use the Chase Sapphire Reserve travel credit on groceries instead. You've seen the American Express Premium Marriott card let you use the Marriott credit for restaurant spend. They've basically wanted to make sure that customers are getting the value they expected from the card because valuable customers are expensive to acquire for a card company. Once they have those customers, they don't want to lose them. I mean, the customers who are going to be their best customers in the future are likely the ones who have been their best customers in the past. So when that annual fee comes due, it's a decision point. And, you know, look, what you want to do is look at the value that you're getting and you compare it to the fee and you want to make sure that you're certain of that value and that it's greater than, not just equal to that fee. And at a time where you may not be using lounges or you may not be traveling, those travel benefits don't speak as loudly. And so the idea was let's bridge that gap. Not every card company did that. Some of them have suffered because of it. And it's going to be expensive for them to reacquire customers. So we actually think that we're probably going to start seeing, and we have started to see, much bigger initial bonus offers to begin reacquiring customers. Banks went silent for a while. They weren't sure what the economy was going to look like, what the job situation was going to be. It was very difficult to model. So who do you extend credit to, and how do you get people to take a travel card during the pandemic? So when that they started to come out of that, we've seen big, 75, 80, 100,000 mile sign-up offers from different cards, and in some cases even more, because they needed to make up for lost time. And look, the end of the year is coming, and they've got numbers to hit. They've got
Speaking of numbers to hit, I'm hearing stories that people are calling their card companies and negotiating a much lower annual fee to retain them.
It depends on the card issuer, the approach they take. And some are only going to look and see whether a card member was a good customer worth keeping or not. Others are going to be more generous, and it may be that there's an offer to get a statement credit equal to the fee based on using the card for spend. Or it may be incentivizing with miles to keep the card and spend on the card. But, look, if you're on the fence and you're really not sure whether a card makes sense, have a conversation with your bank issuer, because they may have an offer to keep you.
You know what? The famous rule, if you don't ask, you don't get. Exactly. Well, it's interesting because we're at a sort of threshold moment here with mileage, with cards, with vaccines, with therapeutics, with rapid response, widespread testing. It's all sort of converging. And so my guess, and tell me what you think, Gary, is that this conversation we're having now may be completely moot by the end of February as travel comes, at least leisure travel, comes roaring back.
I don't know what the date is. I do think I'm more optimistic than many. Look, this is a very, very difficult time right now with a lot of folks who have been getting sick. But the number of people who have gotten sick and aren't really vulnerable to it for a little bit for the most part, plus the vaccines taken together may, really rocket us to a place where, things are under control and we feel comfortable traveling again. It's going to come back domestically first, and the vaccine is going to be much more available in the U.S. than in many parts of the world. Look, the first two that are going to be approved here, the Pfizer already has been, and then the Moderna vaccine as well. I mean, these have to be stored at very cold temperatures, and that's not something that is going to be possible in all parts of the world. So we may be ahead of much of the world, and so we'll have to wait and see what travel restrictions look like internationally.
My thanks to Gary. And whenever I want great context and perspective in the airline business, I turn to analyst Henry Hartevelt, who isn't shy about talking about the past, the present, and as we enter a new year, the future. And he's always been right. As we recap the year, may I remind everybody that even pre-pandemic, December has never been a happy time for most airlines. It's the time of the year that they struggle in December and January and February to get to like April so that they can actually get solvent again. It's not a pleasant time financially for most airlines. In fact, historically, if you take a look at when airlines have gone bankrupt, in many cases, it's December. Eastern Airlines, 1989. And then again in 1991. Pan Am in 1991. And then, of course, TWA in 2000. I'm joined by someone who knows a lot about airline history. Next to him, I should say, I'm sort of like the second biggest aviation geek. He's the number one aviation geek. He's the president of the Atmosphere Research Group. But when he's not doing that, he's a bona fide airline historian. Henry Hartevelt, how are you, sir?
Peter, thank you very much for that very nice compliment. I appreciate it.
Well, it's true. I read your posts all the time, and every time you post, you attach a visual, and I'm always seeing pictures I never even knew existed of airports and terminals and planes. And I should also say, you probably have an unmatched collection of branded airline drinking glasses. You do. And we're talking about airlines that are no longer with us, like Bonanza and of course, Piedmont and some of the aforementioned airlines, Eastern and Pan Am and TWA, but some even wilder ones. And I've collected them too, but nowhere near your collection. So hats off to you on that, or I should say little umbrellas off to you on that too.
Bottoms up.
Bottoms up. So let's talk historically about this time of the year. It's when Pan Am ran out of cash and Delta wouldn't really come to the rescue. Eastern went belly up. TWA, once a great airline, also said goodbye. What is it about December?
Well, first, I worked early in my career at TWA. And so when that one shut down, that really hurt. December is a really tough month for airlines. Not a lot of cash comes across the threshold in December. Business travel, back when these airlines shut down, business travel would generally wind down by Thanksgiving. And that left them with the Thanksgiving weekend, which is mostly leisure travel, and then not a lot of business coming until January or February when the business travelers began to return. But all of these airlines were different, Peter. In the case of Eastern, there had been a very long, protracted labor strike at the airline. They were owned by Texas Air Corporation, run at the
Frank
time.
Lorenzo.
Frank Lorenzo. Right. And I was working at Continental, Eastern's sister airline, when Eastern shut down. And that was a really sad day. But that was a function of Texas Air and Eastern essentially at war with the labor, the money ran out. And so Eastern shut down. Pan Am, as you noted, shut down December 4th, 1991. That was due to the fact that Pan Am had exhausted its cash for the most part, and they had thought they had a deal with Delta to rescue the airline. Pan Am was essentially going to run flights just to South America, and Delta was going to take over the rest of the airline. Delta decided not to go through with that agreement, and that left Pan Am high and dry. TWA's shutdown, which occurred December 1st, 2001, was planned. TWA went into a prepackaged bankruptcy in 2000. It was acquired, or its assets, I should say, were acquired by American Airlines. So the TWA date was chosen intentionally. In some cases, Peter, I would say that perhaps the airline's finance teams were saying to them, let's file in December because it makes it easier to end it this calendar year versus trying to make it into another year. But, you know, these airlines have teams of lawyers and accountants advising them in these situations.
You know,
but
I have
December
a funny... it is a dark month.
It's a dark month, and it's a dark month for airlines. And, you know, it's a shame that we lost three of America's pioneering airlines in December.
Yeah, and an interesting Eastern Airlines story, because they first filed for bankruptcy in 89, and they kind of limped along. They sold their popular Northeast shuttle to you know who? Trump.
I was there. Donald Trump. I was the marketing director there, Peter. You forget that.
And then Eastern sort of limped along until it finally stopped flying in 1991. But I have a great story for you that I don't think you know. You know, when an airline shuts down, there's an old Ernest Hemingway story about a guy comes to him and says, Ernest, I have terrible news. I lost all my money. I'm bankrupt. I have nowhere to go. And Hemingway says to him, well, how'd that happen? He said, well, slowly and then suddenly. Well, in this situation, when the airline finally pulls the plug, they do it relatively sudden. And that means sometimes they even have planes in the air flying passengers. And on the day in 1991, the last Eastern Airlines flight was headed to Miami. It was an L-1011 coming from Bogota. And it landed in Miami. Passengers got off. At that point, everybody knew this was the end for Eastern. It was over. And the plane was towed over to the Eastern Airlines hangar in Miami, where it literally sat as the conservators and everybody else tried to figure out what to do with the assets of the airline for over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And in either 1993 or 1994, the folks at Delta Airlines, which also flew the L-1011, said, you know what? We think we can get this plane that's in this hangar in Miami that hasn't flown in 3 or 4 years. We can buy it dirt cheap, get a volunteer crew to fly it to Atlanta where we have our maintenance base, strip it, do all the maintenance work, paint it in Delta colors, and get it up and flying at very little cost. So they went to the guy who was managing the bankruptcy. They bought it. They sent a volunteer crew down there. All they did was they put enough fuel in it to get it to Atlanta. They started up the engines, and they smoked like you couldn't believe. They kicked the tires and realized they had to replace the tires. They changed the hydraulic fluids for the brakes and the flaps and the ailerons. And then, just with the crew on board, no weight, no cargo, no nothing, this volunteer crew got this thing in the air and flew it to Atlanta. Here comes the funny part. They get to Atlanta. They taxi it into a hangar. Remember, this is a plane that had flown from Bogota, Colombia to Miami in 1991. It's now like 1994 or 1995. Plane has not seen daylight in 4 years. They taxi it into a hangar in Atlanta. The Delta Airlines maintenance guys come in. They start taking off panels, and they get hit with bale after bale after bale of cocaine.
I remember hearing about this.
And can you imagine the cocaine smuggler thinking he's just hit the home run? He's got everything coming in, and the airline fails. And the plane gets towed to a hangar, sits there for 4 years, and then 4 years later, some Delta maintenance guy unscrews a panel, and every cocaine bout, oh my God. And the end of the story is that Delta literally for very little money got this plane up and running, and it was in profit in the first 30 days. They paid for the plane in 30 days. But that's your Eastern Airlines story.
When Braniff International went bankrupt in 1982, I think American was one of several airlines that acquired some of Braniff's 727s. Even crosstown rival Southwest, I think, operated one for a short time. So
now, biggest irony is that when Eastern failed in 91, it ended a 62-year reign for that airline. And the day they failed, they were burning through. They were bleeding $2.5 million a day in cash. Now let's catch up till today. American, United, and Delta, in the wake of COVID-19, their cash burn every day, each airline, is between 18 and 20 million a day. Crazy, right? We're talking to Henry Hardeveldt from Atmosphere Group. Henry, we're in a new year, and the best thing we can say about it is it's not 2020. And I like to think things are going to start to turn around slowly. One story that sort of died away a little bit last year because of COVID-19, but it's now very much back in the news, is, of course, the 737 MAX, which, you know, late in 2020 was certified as airworthy by the FAA. Other foreign regulatory agencies are probably going to follow suit. We've seen one plane go in the air in Brazil. We're about to see another one in 3 days. I'll be on it. It'll be the first U.S. airline to fly the 737 MAX after the grounding, and that'll be an American Airlines flight from LaGuardia to Miami. But when we're talking about the 737 MAX, we're still talking about a huge amount of reputational damage.
Yes, we are, Peter. Look, the two accidents that killed 346 people are bad enough, but the 737 MAX was grounded for 20 months. We did research on this in 2019, and at the time we did the research in May of 2019, we found that only 14% of the 2,000 U.S. airline passengers we surveyed said they would fly the MAX when it returned to the skies within 6 months of its return to service. Just about 20% said that they would fly it within a year. The best thing for the MAX, frankly, is the fact that not only has it been grounded for so long and that so much work has been done to fix all the problems, but that they had a 9-month or so cover, if you will, from COVID, that COVID kept people from traveling. And so by the time people are ready to return to the skies later in 2021, I believe the 737 MAX will have proven itself as reliable and safe. And frankly, by then, it may be viewed as just another airplane by a lot of passengers. So I think a lot of the concern that we are discussing now may go away by the middle of this year.
You know, you may be right. Now, I'm getting on the plane for another reason, not because I want to be first on my block. I'm actually going on it to report on the situation, but because I have to think that under the close scrutiny of Congress, the press, a number of very significant legal cases, many of which are still proceeding, Boeing had no choice but to fix this plane, to fix the software, the flight management system, to properly train pilots, not with iPads, but in real simulators, and not in terms of just how to operate the flight management system, but to how to override it. And I take my cue from the pilots. If the pilots tell me they're going to fly the plane, then count me in. I'm going to be on the plane. And that's what the pilots are telling me now. They're telling me they're going to fly the plane, so I'll be on it. However, having said that, the story's not over. The story that's going to rear its ugly head for at least 2 to 3 years to come, because a lot of those civil cases are still proceeding, may be some criminal cases about the behavior of some officials at Boeing, perhaps even some officials at the FAA, in terms of a questionable relationship that the regulator had with the very company it was supposed to regulate. Not just with the Boeing 737, but dating back 40 years to even the DC-10, and how the FAA sees its role in enacting and enforcing aviation safety.
Now, that's a very valid point, Peter. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to talk about legal things. But the point that you make about the role and relationship that the FAA has had in the past with aircraft manufacturers is certainly something that has to be examined. And it will be very interesting to see what and how the Biden administration will choose to act in terms of funding the FAA. Will they allow the FAA to hire more inspectors so that the FAA can have the independence it really deserves and needs to have, so that it is less reliant on the manufacturers to do some of the work that the FAA should objectively be doing itself?
Yep, you're right. You know, it's interesting. If I told you I built a chair, Henry, please do not sit in that chair, because it'll collapse. So the way that manufacturers have been allowed over decades to hire what they call designated inspectors, people who are on the manufacturer's payroll, to then certify the plane is safe and act as if they are FAA inspectors. This is crazy. This has been going on for 40 years.
Right. It's the equivalent of the fox, keeping charge over the chicken coop. And,
exactly.
And it's not the best. It's not the best way to do it. It's not the right way to do it. But again, in fairness, the FAA has said we can only hire so many people. Our hands are not tied, but they're limited in what we're limited in what we can do. So they've had to rely on the aircraft manufacturers. I hope that we will be able to find funding so the FAA can hire more of their own inspectors, more of their own professionals in other roles to work with the aircraft manufacturers, but to do so in the objective and critical way that they need to ensure mistakes don't happen.
The good news, Henry, is that under a congressional rule right now, about 450 of the planes that Boeing finished building will not be allowed to be inspected by Boeing, but they'll only be certified by the FAA. So fingers crossed, we have learned lessons from this and will also apply them. My thanks to Henry. Each week, there's an amazing publication that lands in my electronic inbox. It's called Airline Weekly, produced by the folks at Skift. And the editor, Madhu Unnikrishnan, always has the facts and figures. In a year in which we've already lost 34 airlines, it's not about crunching the numbers. It may be about how the numbers are crunching us. It's one of those things where, as you spend more and more time watching the airline business, you realize how much you don't know. And everything you think is going to happen doesn't, and everything you don't think is going to happen does. And who's on top of that? Our friend is the editor at Airline Weekly, of course, published by Skift, Madhu Unnikrishnan. How are you, sir?
Thanks for having me, Peter. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, you know, if I was just totaling up the numbers, it's been one depressing year, right? We've had at least 34 airlines that have been liquidated. We have many more that are hanging in the balance, and you track this every day. You still have, hundreds and hundreds of planes parked, Some might even call them retired. And yet, at the same time, there are other airlines out there that are looking at this as an opportunity. And it never ceases to amaze me that as one airline says, okay, we're no longer serving London, or we're dropping Springfield, Illinois, or we're no longer going to fly to Hartford, Connecticut, or to New Haven, Connecticut, all of a sudden someone shows up and says, I'll do it. So I guess the first question I'm going to ask you is, as bleak as losing 34 airlines sounds, how bleak really is it?
It's bleak. I'm not going to lie. let's just back up for a second. When you think of the way airlines started this year, 2020, they were on track to make record-setting profit all over the world. I mean, airlines were sitting really pretty, and then the pandemic happened, and we've seen nothing like this, nothing as catastrophic in the entire century of commercial aviation. And, it's great. There's signs of hope, right? There's a vaccine. There are vaccines that are being deployed around the world, two in the U.S. soon, several others in other parts of the world. And that offers some hope, but until enough people are vaccinated for travelers to feel comfortable getting on an airline again, we're talking 8 to 10 months, it's going to remain bleak. So, I see the press releases you do, a lot of hope on the part of airlines, but I can't help thinking that's misplaced.
Oh no, you're not going to recoup all that. You can't recoup the revenue. And, in many cases, you're not going to recoup the market. But what I find really interesting is, take a look at Southwest Airlines. Here's an airline that in a given year, and this goes over a number of years, in a given year, they might, emphasis on the word might, add one new route. A pretty big deal for them, right? They're a big airline. They've got over 750 planes, if not more, all flying the same type of planes, right? They're all Boeing 737, different models, of course. And here you have American, United, and Delta essentially saying, we're going to dump a lot of routes. And all of a sudden, in 1-2 week span, Southwest Airlines announces 12 new routes. It's like, where'd that come from? Right? And we're talking places like Palm Springs and Santa Barbara, and then going into hubs that they said they'd never fly into, like Miami and Chicago O'Hare. Oh, my God.
Well, what's happening, it's really interesting, and it's not just Southwest. I mean, you look at JetBlue, you look at Frontier, you could even United, adding routes, for example, from non-hub cities like Boston to Florida. And the through line through all of these new route announcements is leisure travel. Business travel, I mean, all airlines acknowledge business travel is more or less gone. Companies are just not sending their road warriors back out on the road. There's a little bit of traction with small and medium-sized businesses, but where the real action is and where they see growth coming in the next 6, 9, 12 months is with leisure travelers, people going to visit their families, people going to, take that vacation, escape the snow of Minnesota and go down to Florida. And that's what you're seeing Southwest and other airlines doing. It's not so much they're adding a whole bunch of routes. They're taking them away from some more business-heavy markets and putting them in what they call the snow and the ski and beach destinations, the sun and ski destinations.
And it's not just Southwest. You mentioned Frontier. The last count I had, I may be down by a few, but the last count I had was Frontier announcing 19 new routes. Like, wow, that never happens.
Right. Yeah, they're all chasing that leisure traveler. They're all chasing the same people, and they're taking them, they're flying them to where they want to go, which is they want to go skiing now or they want to go to the beach.
Now, having said that, I did a little fare search the other day, and Madhu, I'm not making this up. I priced an American Airlines flight on a 777 from Miami to Los Angeles. You want to tell me what the fare was?
Oh, you put me on the spot there, Peter, but let's guess something the same, like $89.
You know what? You're not going to the Showcase Showdown. You're over. It was $32.
Wow.
It was $32. But wait, it gets better. How about Fort Lauderdale to LaGuardia?
I'm going to go with $29.
You're still over. It was 18 on Spirit. I mean, And I'll give you one more. This is the killer. And by the way, I encourage anybody to go online and look it up. I can't make this up. In Mexico, from Mexico City to Guadalajara, take a wild guess.
All right. You've got me. I'm going to say $7.
You know what? You just struck out. You're still over. It was $4.18 on Volaris.
Wow.
Now, I did fail math in high school. I know, I admit this, but I can do some basic addition and subtraction. How does anybody operate a flight at $18 from Fort Lauderdale to LaGuardia?
They don't. I mean, they're not making money. That's just the bottom line. They're not making money. They have to keep those planes here. They have to. They're flying. You know, they're flying. They have to keep the planes where they need to be for the next flight. So.
I'll give you a suggestion. They're flying the planes because they're now making more money on cargo.
That's true for some airlines. I mean, especially, you know, the partner carriers like Delta, American, United, they're making a lot of money on
it. Amazing. I mean, to me, yeah. Right now, you know, at a very tough time for us, where we have all the spiking cases, we're in lockdowns or near lockdowns in California and New York, and so many other locations. We're looking at airfares that normally would stimulate traffic. People would say, I got to go, right? The cab ride to the airport's more expensive, and yet they're not. However, in Mexico, which is doing great, by the way, it's open for American travelers, and the airfares to Mexico from the U.S. are going up. The airfares within Mexico are matching the bus fares in Mexico. It's just amazing. And the real question that I've got that I don't know if either of us has the answer for is, will those fares stay that depressed through the first quarter? My guess is they will.
They will? Did you say they will or they won't?
My guess is they will.
I agree with you. I think they will. I think, you know, you're already looking at the first quarter. Airlines are sort of revising downward their forecast for demand. I think you'll see fares continue to stay really, really low.
So it's a buyer's market. What was that?
Just a little anecdote for you that I just speak to the crowd. I sent a last recently. Said,
Well, look, the real bottom line here is, you know, it's not just the law of supply and demand, it's fear. It's the economy. It's people's ability to spend any kind of money on what might be, you know, discretionary travel. Business travel, as you and I both know, is essentially dead on arrival for the next year. Meetings and conventions, probably for the next 18 months to 2 years, because that's how they book them. But the real, you know, the real leader is going to be, for the foreseeable future, leisure travel. And so if people are going to stay home this Christmas, which many of us should because of the situation, and we want to travel responsibly in the next year, now's the time to roll the dice, especially when airlines have gotten rid of their ticket change fees, and book away at low prices or redeem your frequent flyer miles. Either way, it's a win-win situation if you are operating on the same hope that I am, not just for vaccines, but also for widespread reliable testing that will bring back a lot of confidence. My thanks to Madhu, to Henry Hartevelt, and to Gary Leff. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. And for more interviews with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, rate or review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, and there's a lot of it, just log on to petergreenberg.com. Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.